At last year's General Assembly, Leslie Mack shared these words. Our faith is a lesson in contradictions. We see contradictions in the wave of Black Lives Matter banners being hung by our congregations around the country, and yet in truth, many Black UUs feel unwelcome in our pews. We see this in a GA planning committee who wholeheartedly supported our request for an explicitly Black healing space, and yet the need for that space exists at all. There is a disconnect between the work we want to do and the way we go about doing it, between our principles and our actions, between our words and our deeds. As of this morning, 605 Unitarian Universalist congregations have decided to spend either this morning or next focusing on the waters in which we swim. Waters that are filled with contradiction, deep wounds, hard words, and a lot of emotion. As we enter into this time and conversation today, I invite you to think of those 605 congregations, tens of thousands of Unitarian Universalists. We are not in this alone. We know that people process in different ways, so after this morning's service, if you are someone who needs to talk or ask questions directly following, we invite you to stay in the sanctuary where you can meet in small groups and where you will be encouraged to share your reflections on the three reflection questions in your orders of service. If you are someone who needs to go home, think more, read more, feel more, and then come back for conversation, we will have opportunities for reflection in the coming week to do the same. And if after today you want to know how to move further into this work, into conversations such as this one, there's a Racial Justice Initiative planning meeting on May 2nd at 7 p.m., where the conversation, work, and relationships will certainly continue. And if you are thinking, here in this space, I don't want any of this. This is not for my Sunday morning experience. The fact that every Facebook corner of this congregation, every evening meeting and parking lot conversation, relationships are being tested over today's conversation. So that means we need to bring it here. We need to feel the feelings and be willing to be moved, and we need to sing together, and then we need to go out into this beautiful day reminded that we sought out being a part of a Unitarian Universalist community for a reason. And that reason, to be the people described in these five candles, will always require something of us in this world. Else we seek a faith that speaks of another. Leslie Mack's charge to Unitarian Universalists was not new at the 2016 General Assembly. And today we hear it again, in part because the sentiment will be reiterated at this year's GA, and likely the next, if not many years from now. Over the past month, the Unitarian Universalist Association, its members, its leaders, ministers, lay folks, musicians, and onlookers from corners of America to the British Islands and small towns of India have been in deeply intense, painful, and for many, surprising conversations over the contradictions within our faith. And they have given it a name, a cause, a diagnosis: white supremacy. These are big words when paired together, there is no doubt. Images of white sheets and hooded men and burning crosses are often the first image that comes to mind. So how is it that what started this most recent conversation, a hiring practice, and the failure to respond with any sort of accountability or humility about it, how is it that this is camped in the same verbal category as some of our nation's most deplorable and inhumane individuals? I know a lot of people in this room have mixed feelings, or perhaps not mixed feelings at all, about the use of these words. I get it. I'm reminded of the first lesson of OWL, in which the kids are told to shout out every word they can think of that is a synonym for penis. Come on, we're all a little anxious. Let's have a laugh in between here. These words hold power, and until we demystify them, understand them, hear their purpose, hear from those who are more affected by them than those of us who don't want to be associated with them, we won't be able to use them. And if at the end of today you don't feel comfortable using this language, I want to be really clear, don't. You are simply invited into different work if that's the case. The spiritual practice of listening, as well as the spiritual practices of not dismissing, discrediting, or devaluing the truths of those among us who are finally hearing the experience of their faith and lives named in a more honest way. So let's get to some definitions and distinctions. This is from Jesse Benn in a recent Huffington Post article. White supremacy refers to a racial hierarchy in which whiteness sits atop of. The United States was founded on a system, legally, culturally, economically, and politically, of white male upper class supremacy. All of these remain today. Each can be confirmed through a number of outcomes and measurements: wage gaps, employment gaps, cultural influence, political power, economic power, incarceration rates, sentencing disparities, and on and on. Those arguments don't need to be made here. They are established facts. So when I say something about white supremacy, this system of racial hierarchy is what I'm referring to. You can see that the Klan and Nazis have little to do with this system. In fact, every member of white supremacist terrorist organizations could fall off the face of the earth tomorrow, a guy can dream, can't he? And white supremacy would remain as powerful as it was today. He goes on. Now, white privilege, on the other hand, is a reference to the myriad of benefits bestowed on white people stemming from the aforementioned system of white supremacy. It's white privilege that growing up, almost all of my teachers in school looked like me, or that almost all of the characters in children's books and on TV looked like me. It's white supremacy that created a system in which this was inevitable. It's white privilege to walk into a room and be interviewed by someone who looks like me. It's white supremacy that made it so this is a routine occurrence. So white supremacy refers to a system. White privilege refers to its benefits. The two are inextricably tied, but not the same thing. I use that HuffPost article to offer some distinctions, not only because I think it's well described, but because I want to lift up that those in UU circles who are using this language are not some fringe, radical, disruptive group. Perhaps the first time white America saw this language on a large scale with a different sentiment in recent years was in Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me. Winner of the 2015 National Book Award for Nonfiction, white supremacy was used throughout those pages. Language changes over time. Some loses power. How easy is it for us to now say racism or privilege? And some claims power again because hard things should not be softened once we get comfortable with the way it sounds coming from our mouths. I was going to use the example of the word queer and how much this has changed in the last decades. How it moved from an epitaph spit at my lineage and now a bold expression reclaimed and expansive. But this shift in language and the reason to shift it is more like my use of the word lesbian. The way I fall on that identity as the one that is safer, easier to hear, to stomach, to understand. It is the way we've talked about race relations rather than sundown towns, the way we have tried to think of all the other ways we could say white supremacy rather than sitting with the reality that it's being said, that it means something. And I know a lot of people are arguing with me in your heads right now already that none of it matters. None of the work we do here of claiming language or understanding it for what it is matters because the rest of the world still hears white sheets and burning crosses no matter how many articles Kim quotes from. And to that, I want to say, in that retort, there is a valuing of a norm, of a system, of language, of bodies, of voices that keep things running just as they are. And therefore, a dismissal of the experiences, the truths, the bodies, the voices whose faith, our shared faith and lives, depend on a disruption and a more honest naming of the way things are. So here's a small bit of honest naming of the way things are at UUCWC. 7 of the 8 staff members are white. The one person of color, Roberto, works in our kitchen. We have no clear path to leadership. It is a who knows who process rather than a valuing of different perspectives and experiences, which means voices of color who are coming into this space or who have been watchful rather than jumping in will always be kept on the sidelines. At the congregational meeting, when we discussed the banner and beforehand in preparation for it, there were comments about how we might lose some white folks over the Black Lives Matter line. But there was never a public celebration about the folks of color or white people who might find a home here because of it. And just one more, though there are and will be so many more. I would be surprised if I have ever preached a racial justice-oriented sermon that wasn't intended for white listeners, making invisible the congregants of color and their needs on a Sunday morning. It's a system. It's not intentional hatred or one person's unchecked privilege. It is larger than that, and it's not meant to be named something comfortable or even palatable. It's simply got to be named. Years ago, I was working as a waitress in the middle of summer and had this horrific sunburn that caused blisters all down my back. Before the shift began, I cringed as I put my shirt over the layers of aloe and tried to walk delicately through the crowd of people at the wedding we were catering. Hours went by as I braced myself for the unintentional brush or bump with people and had done pretty well protecting myself. And then, just at the end of the night, a man drinking and happy to see someone he knew came up and gave me a big, happy slap on the back. I sucked the air in, teared up, smiled, left the space, and cried. I don't know what it means to be a person of color in a predominantly white space, but I imagine it feels a lot like that. This careful movement in and out of spaces and between people, layered with all sorts of ointment for the old wounds, but also protection from the possible anticipated new ones. Smiles, and then somewhere else the tears. Any justice work must be done in community and relationship. And right now, the folks of color, not somewhere out in UUA land, but right here in UUCWC, the children who we beam at, who walk to their classrooms to go now in peace, and the friends who we share meals with at neighborhood potlucks, and the leaders of this community who make our sound possible and our staffing possible, our beloveds are moving through this space and between people while their tone and words used to express their hurt are criticized. And in this, the criticism of the language has in some spaces become the focus rather than the reality of the pain. It's a prioritizing, again, of white comfort rather than the experiences of people of color. And this decentering of that pain, it's like the last big happy slap on the back when you've already got boils rising from the previous burn. As one member said to me recently, it's the frustration of your hurt never automatically taking center stage. So how can we be in community and in relationship together? How will we be? I continue to go back to a colleague's recent comment that my UU practice calls me to listen when someone comes to me hurting, and not to tell them to come back when they make their pain more comfortable to bear. We are Unitarian Universalists. Pain can't be offensive. Hurt can't be decentered. Discomfort can't be feared. It is the soil of our tradition. To be of this world, to be in it, to take human life and all life seriously, to believe it to be the expression of the sacred, to say that we are the people who will work to make that sacred truth seen and spoken. Pain can't be offensive. It must be the thing that makes us run to one another in desperate hope that there is a salve somewhere within our reach. So let us reach, and let us know truly who is in need of that balm. So I had all these other parting words that Marianne and the staff and some other folks had read beforehand, like to make sure that I was ending on the note I wanted to, and then I decided to go with something a little bit more honest. So here's what I want to share right now. And I'm actually not sure if it's right, because it's a titch about me, and that's not what this is about. But when I came out, it was so ugly. Like ugly within my own intimate family. And I hope she doesn't listen to this, because my mother ended up in the hospital the night I shared who I was because her body couldn't handle it. I have forgiven 99% of that time. But the thing that is still egregious, the thing that still breaks me open, is that I was raised Unitarian Universalist. She gave me that. I was given a certain understanding, a promise about how I would be loved, accepted, and affirmed in the world. And maybe not the world, but certainly those who I knew and trusted. And then I wasn't. That promise was severed. The heartstring was strained. So today and in the days to come, I am unwilling to break the promise that was broken for me. This faith means something. We have made promises to one another, and I pray you will keep them with me and that we will keep them together. We have shown up. We have been willing to name some ugly realities out there, but also in here. We've decided to move from the castle and be of this world unprotected and more alive, more worth a story to tell, more faithful than many. We can be scared. We should be deeply hurt. In the words of Megan Foley, our district lead, and in the midst of that, I hope you're feeling that your call, as ever, is to heal the disconnections that you encounter within our denomination and beyond. To do less is to do our faith a disservice. And to create connection where connection never existed before, that is holy work. We've been given this day. Let us rejoice. Let us be glad in it. And let us continue. Because this is just the start of a very hard and very worthwhile conversation.